Welcome to the conference. Please enter the conference ID followed by the pound key. Thank you. Guest ID accepted.
All right. Good evening, everybody. Welcome to another Monday night installment here at Your Remedy Is in the Law. My name is Martin Michelson. I'll be your host for this evening's conference call brought to you by Your Remedy Is in the Law, which is a direct affiliation with Americans Restoring America. Before we get started with this evening, though, it is very important that I provide you with the following disclaimer. Nothing that you hear on this call tonight may be deemed by you in any way, shape, or form to be legal advice. If you're on this call because of a situation in your life where you require legal advice, I very politely ask you to hang up the phone. Now, we don't mean to sound rude when we say this. We just want to express to everybody in no uncertain terms that anybody looking for legal advice has no place or business here on any of these calls. Nobody here at Your Remedy Is in the Law or any of the programs offered by Americans Restoring America is a lawyer, attorney, or any member of the bar. Therefore, nobody here is able to offer you any legal advice. Should you require legal advice, my advice to you would be get an attorney. What you will get here at these calls at Your Remedy is just a lot of folks saying what they might do or that they're similarly situated to you. You might get a little bit of education out of the deal. You might get a little bit of further understanding more than what you had before, but all these calls are just for entertainment purposes. It's just folks saying what they might do were they similarly situated. But, of course, it's always up to you to do your own due diligence. All right, on to the next subject. Go over a few things here with Your Remedies in the Law very quickly. If we go to the homepage, www.yourremediesinthelaw.com, we look up in the upper right-hand corner, you see a little picture of the Constitution. Click on that, and you'll have a separate page come up that's just got two items on it, otherwise blank page. These two items are of much importance, though, especially if this is all new to you. First and most importantly on the left is the Jurisdictionary course. This is your 24-hour crash course on the rules of civil procedure, better known as American Jurisprudence, or AMJUR. The rules of civil procedure are essentially the foundation or structure upon which all law in America rests. So to have a firm and thorough understanding of AMJUR means to have at least a basic concept of what's going on in virtually any court scenario that you find yourself in. On the right is the common law default process, where it's primarily known for its nationally high win rate in traffic cases. That's what it's most popularly acquired for. But that's not really why we have it up here. The reason that we have it up here is once you've gone through the Jurisdictionary course and then you start getting into the common law default process, you'll see very quickly that it mirrors up almost perfectly. It acts as a real-life homework assignment. And, of course, with the common law default process used the vast majority of the time is for traffic scenarios. And then, of course, I don't have to tell you, traffic cases usually on the grand scale of everything and anything that we can encounter, traffic is usually on the lower end. It's usually not anything too severe. So folks like it because it's, they feel brave enough to, even if they have limited or no experience, to try that. Of course, the mindset's probably, if I lose, I'm not losing big. Worst case scenario, I might just have to pay a little, ticket or whatnot. But it works so perfectly for a homework assignment. So you go through the whole jurisdictionary process, and then you go through the common law default process once or twice. And just in that little short action there, you've gone from, for some folks, knowing absolutely nothing to having a fairly good idea, basic concept, what's going on that'll put you probably ahead of, at least safely three-quarters of people out there. Now, of course, with a very, very reasonable contribution of $250 for the American Jurisprudence there, and then $150 for the common law default process, very, very small contribution that we're asking there for that. So more than worth it. We strongly encourage you to pick that up today or at your earliest convenience. All right, on to the next subject. Every time, of course, you visit Your Remedy Is in the Law, you see that little blue box that pops up wanting you to check out Americans Restoring America, wanting to know if you wanted to continue on to the homepage of Your Remedy as you had requested, or do you want to stop for a moment and check out Americans Restoring America. The reason that we've done this is very simple. We're trying to get folks to explore. There are many different information providers on multiple different topics all that your remedy is in the law. And then your remedy is in the law is only one of a dozen or more sites that are under the umbrella of Americans Restoring America. So there's a ton there for you to check out on so many different topics, so many different points of education. It's a great idea to make it. It makes it worth your while there to at your convenience to check out what else is there under Americans Restoring America. If you have any questions on whether or not we have an information provider that could give you a personal educated opinion about your particular situation, or if we have any programs or tools for education, for do-it-yourself on any different types of topics, you can email me directly, mm@yourremediesinthelaw.com. Or, of course, you can always call the 1-800 number, 1-800-625-4250. Make sure you leave a detailed message with your name and a good contact number and the topic of what it is you want to discuss. And we'll be happy to assist you in any way that we can and get back to you as quickly as possible. Grassfire Communications, formerly known as Statewide Communications. If you're not already a member, please do sign up. Tell your friends and your family about it. That's that map of the United States that you see on virtually every site that we have. It's a private communications platform that enables you to speak with one another on a local level based on a very strict, pre-decided topics of discussion. Essentially, how it works is this. It's a very easy setup, very user-friendly. Put your name in here, click next. Put your zip code in here, click next, that sort of thing. As you get towards the end, it'll start asking you what your interests are. You choose from a very, very healthy list of different options. It could be anything from veterans' rights to home foreclosure to IRS to credit cards to the change of status. There's on and on and on. And so what it's going to do is kind of what most of you would think of as a social media, but really nothing like a social media, very private and very specific. But how some of you would associate with social media, it's going to put you in contact with people right there in your local area or whatever you have your radius set to that have similar interests. I shouldn't have to tell you at that point what the ramifications could be of that. And that's all we're trying to do is get folks to wake up and to start educating themselves and come out of their shell and grow. And Grassfire Communications is a phenomenal tool for that, so we encourage you to check that out. All right. So there's no cost for using Grassfire Communications, either by signing up or the regular use of it. There's no cost for Grassfire, so we encourage you to pass that around, tell your friends and tell your family about it. Freedoms Radio, if you are over the road, you don't want to deal with the card process at this time, you don't want to set up yourself up with a membership at Your Remedy Is in the Law. If you're in a position to do so, we strongly encourage that as well. There's so many different perks and options and good things that we have. But if that's not an option for you right now, you've got Freedoms Radio. All these calls are put out over the Freedoms Radio website where you can listen for free anytime you'd like. You never have to miss a call again if you don't wish. There's a question bar there where you can type in questions or comments. Submit. We read those out over the air as best as we can. Of course, we're pretty successful on it. We're usually at 100%. And so that makes it where you can stay in contact with what's going on and stay abreast of these calls. Of course, if you are in a position to, a budget allows, we do encourage you to go ahead and get your membership at Your Remedy Is in the Law. Very, very affordable, again, at just a contribution of $10 a month. That'll actually give you access to the archives. Where you can not only listen to every call every night, but you can actually go all the way back to the beginning on sometimes these topics are going back years, just a jaw-dropping, vast wealth of knowledge right there. archives that's waiting on you. You just pick up your membership at Your Remedy, $10 a month, and you're off and cruising there. You could do that with your credit card or PayPal, whatever works for you. All right, begin winding down here. I'd like to go over one last bit of housekeeping. This is your caveat emptor, or your buyer beware. Your Remedy is in the law is under the umbrella of Americans Restoring America. When you come aboard and you go with an information provider, though, you're doing just that. Information providers pay for advertising at Your Remedy is in the law. This payment would be an expense to that info provider, along with any other expenses they might have associated with your particular product or service. When you contact us, all we simply do is listen to your scenario, quickly deduce from a list of folks that, honestly, the vast majority of you would never be able to find on your own, not because you're not capable of finding them, because they don't want to be found. And they are very talented. They've made great strides to make sure that they can't be found. And we make the make the introductions, and then we assist you, and we move to like an assistant position where we help you with basic things, documents you might need to fill out, things that you might need to gather up for your information provider, and that's really it. The reason that we bring that up primarily, of course, is for the refund policy. The refund policy at Your Remedy is of the law. And of course, there is none. If there was to be any talk of a credit or a refund, that would be a strict and private matter between you and your information provider. But even then, it's very few and far between. It's got to be a pretty extenuating circumstance. Again, you're always expected to have done your due diligence before you assign yourself to any information provider. Make sure that you feel that you're going to be able to work well with them, and you like what it is that you have to say, and you trust in the educational process and the method there. So that's very, very important. All right. Lastly, pertaining here to all of the information providers at Your Remedy is in the law, we want to remind everybody that all these speakers are our guests and should be treated with the highest level of respect. If you disagree with something that a speaker has to say, that's fine. Disagreeing is how we learn. But always, you must be civil and polite. Besides, if the information provider is given the question or the scenario properly, and then, of course, is able to then answer back properly and calmly, then we all win. Everybody gets education on the matter, and everybody's happy. All right, so, well, that is my ramble for this evening, folks. So without further ado, it's my pleasure to turn the call over at this time to Mr. Edward, and I believe he will go ahead introduce our speaker for this evening. Let me check, actually, real quick, Mr. Edward. Oh, no, I thought I saw somebody new. That was my mistake. Go ahead.
Not a problem. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. Let's start with the congressional record. The Congressional Record of the United States, June 13, 1967. 67. Mm-hmm. I was a junior in high school. Pages 15,641 through 15,646. Quote, a citizen of the United States is civilly dead, operating as a co-trustee and co-beneficiary of the private constructive trust, the PCT, known as the SESTK Trust, of the United States, Inc., Incorporated, under the 14th Amendment, which upholds the debt of the United States of America and the United States Incorporated in Section 4. Quote, this is People versus De La Guerra, 40 California, 311-342. This is an 1870 court case. It is evident that the United States citizens have not the political rights which are vested in citizens of the states. They are not constituents of any community in which is vested any sovereign power of government. Their position partakes more of the character of subjects than of citizens. They are subject to the laws of the United States, but have no voice in its management. If they are allowed to make laws, the validity of these laws is derived from the sanction of a government in which they are not represented. Mere citizenship they may have, but the political rights of citizens they cannot enjoy. Did you grasp that? You hear me talk about the United States citizens are property of the United States, the franchises of the United States. This court case, just after the Civil War, lays it out. This is the classification that they gave, provided for the former slaves. United States citizens were for these Americans of African descent post-Civil War. They weren't for anyone else. But then they got the idea how profitable it was by suckering everyone in. There are two classes of citizens. This is Gardenia versus Board of Registers, 48 South 788, 169 Alabama. This is 1909. There are two classes of citizens, citizens of the United States and of the states. And one may be a citizen of the former without being a citizen of the latter. Federal citizenship is a municipal franchise domiciled in the District of Columbia, and the political rights of federal citizens are franchises which they hold as privileges at the legislative discretion of the Congress. Murphy versus Ramsey, 114 U.S. 15. This is 1885. Are you familiar with U.S. versus Valentine, 288 F. Sup. 957? The only absolute and unqualified right of a United States citizen is to residence within the territorial boundaries of the United States. Wheeling Steel Corporation, therefore the U.S. citizen, citizens of District of Columbia, residing in one of the states of the Union, are classified as property and franchises of the federal government as an individual entity. Hendrick versus Maryland, South Carolina SC Reporters, 610 through 625, it's 1914 decision. A U.S. citizen, upon leaving the District of Columbia, becomes involved in interstate commerce as a resident and does not have the common law right to travel of a citizen of one of several states. Excuse me, Your Honor, how did that law enforcement officer that turned on his blue lights that I saw in my rearview mirror make the determination that I am a resident of this state and not a citizen of one of the several states? How was that determination made? They don't want to have that dialogue in their courtroom with witnesses. Eustis versus Cruikshank. There is in our political system a government of each of the several states and a government of the United States. Each is distinct from the other and has citizens of its own. Maxwell versus Dow, 20 SCR 448, page 455, quote, the privileges and immunities of citizens of the United States do not necessarily include all the rights protected by the first 8 amendments of the federal Constitution against the powers of the federal government, end quote. City of Dallas versus Mitchell, 245 Southwest 944. The rights of the individuals are restricted only to the extent that they have been voluntarily surrendered by the citizenship of the agencies of government. When you have the word is intercourse, it means more than having sex. When you have intercourse with the government, you are voluntarily surrendering your citizenship to them. Ex parte, Frank Knowles, 5 California Rep. 300. This can also be confirmed in the definition sections of Title 5 United States Code, Title 26 United States Code, and Title 1 of the United States Code. it might be correctly said that there's no such thing as a citizen of the United States. A citizen of any one of the states of the Union is held to be called and is called a citizen of the United States, although technically and abstractly there is no such thing. End quote. Therefore, a U.S. citizen is a piece of property. If you read any of these old court cases prior to the Civil War, where slavery was the issue, the debate was always over property rights. Therefore, a United States citizen is a slave. The 14th Amendment defines what a United States citizen is. Quote, Section 1, all persons born or naturalized in the United States and subject to the jurisdiction thereof are citizens of the United States, end quote. Therefore, the so-called 14th Amendment criminally converts U.S. citizenship completely upside down from what the Founding Fathers intended. So with that having been said, it is my sincere pleasure to turn this call over to our speaker this evening, G.W. Go ahead, buddy.
Hello.
Hello to you.
Thanks. Hope your week was well. Was good. Mayor Michael. I just wanted to. I don't really have a whole lot of new information to bring on tonight. Just kind of taking an easy week here. So, is there anything special that we should be talking about tonight, Michael? In your view?
It's always the same thing different. It's always the difference between being a Union State citizen, as expressed in Title 8, Section 15.2, as an American national. It's always that versus the United States citizen. You know, if you want to talk about examples that you've had in the past and their outcomes, that would be good. The whole idea here tonight is to give everyone the opportunity to understand very succinctly you are placed in a category through fraud and deception to be considered a franchise and property of the United States, when in reality you have rights from the creator of the universe. You're not a created entity of the Congress. You're a free man or woman by your birth. It's a birthright. Our people, my grandfather, 8 times removed, go back, put great 8 times behind his name, Nathaniel. He was listed in the Massachusetts militia for darn near 30 years. And he fought in the War for Independence. He fought in the War of 1812. And the King George III referred to him as his peer. He referred to him as another king, another monarch, as well as all the other former enemy combatants. When you understand this and your mindset is this, you can deal with just about any litigation on that. So maybe GW's got some more stories to share with us. I don't know.
You know, one of the things that I wanted to take along on with what you just said in the 14th Amendment, okay, is when you're reading, read the first part again, if you will, that, you know, where it says, and subject to, okay? Can you read that part again?
Yes, I can. I've closed it, but I can find it real quick.
Okay.
Here, no, I got it right here. Surprised, I already had it open. I just didn't realize it. The 14th Amendment defines the U.S. Section 1. All persons, first off, there's a word for you. Wasn't we the people? All persons born or naturalized in the United States and subject to the jurisdiction thereof.
Yes. Isn't it interesting that it uses the word and subject to, not are subject to? It would be totally different if they said are subject to, but it says and subject to, meaning, well, if they're subject to. isn't that interesting how they worded that? Because it doesn't say they are subject to. It says and.
You know, we had, back in the 1990s, we had former President Clinton, Bill Clinton, sit there and agonize over the word is.
Yeah. Yeah.
And its definition.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, because of his interfacing with Judge David Wood Miller, you know, is the one that told him to say that.
Really? I didn't know that.
Yeah. Yeah. Also, David Wood Miller is the one that that had him also under his deposition when he was when he was being grilled about what's her face?
Monica Lewinsky.
Monica Lewinsky, and he said 900 times in that situation when they would ask him a question, he would say, and this is what David told me that he taught him what to say. He said, he told him to say, if I understand the question correctly, the answer is blah, blah, blah. If I understand your question, correctly. And the judge got so mad at him because he would keep on, he said it 900 times. And if I understand your question correctly, I learned, in fact, because of that, I was doing that too in a couple of different depositions. Because what's interesting about that phrase is it is what you're saying is if I understand the question correctly, it's yes, or if I understand your question correctly, it's no. It really trumps it. Because you're putting a condition. You're putting a condition on it up front.
Oh.
Obviously,
if the answer was wrong, I didn't understand the question correctly.
Correct, right. Gives you a little bit of plausibility. Yeah.
Yeah,
that was an interesting one also.
All right.
Little inside baseball for those listening. Anyway. Yeah,
we have some people already raising their hands. So if you want to, if you want to just finish your thought there, then we'll go directly into Q&A.
Well, it's interesting because when you read through the 14th Amendment, you can just find all the landmines. Okay, and at some point we'll do that one of these weeks. We'll pull it out and we'll go through it because it really is. They put a bunch of different escape clauses in there, just like what it says, you know. Oh, hold on for a second. Let me plug in my battery or something.
Wonder where he went.
Okay, did that turn them off? Hold on. All right, that probably.
Hold on a second. I got an emergency set here that I can turn on real fast.
Can you hear me okay?
Perfectly.
Oh, good. Weather set just went. Okay, so. Yeah, we should go over the 14th Amendment one of these times, maybe next week. Because they put the escape clause in there, like where it says, you know, every person nationalized in the United States and subject to the jurisdiction. You know, they didn't say are subject to the jurisdiction of District of Columbia. It doesn't say that. That's where that little escape clause is. So What's interesting, though, about that is it's contingent upon us, the real man or woman, to make sure we get in the right designation, that we are the belligerent plaintiffs, because we are the one, because by presumption of law, they just presume you're in that category. They're automatically going to presume that you're a citizen. We have to make sure we have the evidence in place, the citizenship evidence. We understand it and know it and how to talk about it. That's the biggest thing. I mean, honestly, it's bigger than even getting your passport. Really, who you are, and to be able to talk about it in such a way, right words, right understanding, comprehension, be able to convey it to else with ease. And that's really, when people ask me, you know, they want this education. I want education. What things
you're
do I
breaking
study?
Up, I think.
Am I?
Mm-hmm.
Breaking up? Okay.
Can you go on speakerphone or want to noise? Or?
No, I don't have any background noise. I can go on speaker.
There we go. Is that better?
Much better. Thank you.
Okay,
so what did you
say?
We didn't hear what you said.
Okay, sorry. It's really contingent upon the student, whoever's on this call, whoever has corrected their status, to really understand who they are and who they're not, and be able to speak about it and to talk about it in a way that's easy, that's just on your tongue, that where you really have it. You know, that I would say that's the most important part of correcting your status, and even over, dare I say, just even having the passport and the passport card, which, you know, I'm not trying to downplay that. I'm just trying to say that I get these people all the time that are trying to, you know, they ask me, what do I need to read next? What do I need to study? And it's like, the most important thing is to really understand how to talk about it and express yourself so that you know that they know that you're not a United States citizen or a U.S. person or a U.S. individual. And what does that mean? And be prepared to stand and deliver. And just like the Bible says, you know, always be prepared to give an answer for the hope that lies within you. You know, we do that as believers. And it's the same way with who you are, because by presumption of law, they're always going to put you in that lower category. They're always going to put you in the category of a U.S. citizen. And that's not where you want to be. Most of the time, that's not where you want to be. You can play that part sometimes, but you really, really want to be able to extrapolate and be able to have the words on your tongue and understand who you are. And so I would say that's probably one of the most, you know, important things to be able to explain and have ready, you know, in case anybody would ask. So I think we could probably open it up for the questions and answers now.
All right. Turn that over to Martin.
Okay.
Or not. Martin?
I'm sorry, can I be?
You're breaking up.
How about now? Is this any better?
Much better, thank you. Go ahead.
Sure. *2 on your keypad, folks, if you have a question. *2 to raise your hand. We'll unmute you one at a time. If you're on the Freedoms Radio side, again, when you type your question or your comment in that little bar there, please don't forget to click submit or we won't see it. First up, we've got Ed in Pennsylvania. Go ahead, Ed.
I've got a question or ask for further explaining. We do this through the State Department of the U.S. government. And hearing several people say where I was at last night, several people had said, "Oh, you do this, you just go to the your county recorder's office, record your affidavit, and you're all done. Then you just get out of the contracts." I don't know where that idea comes from myself.
I do.
Well, yeah, I'd like to hear that. But I'd also like to hear why that's not the right thing to do.
Well, I'm not saying it's the wrong thing to do.
I am.
Okay, Michael will follow up here in a second. I just didn't want to be that pushy about it. But I do know where that comes from. That comes from the teachings of Anna von Reitz and David Strait.
That's what I thought.
Yeah, they seem to be the progenitors of that, you know, information getting out there. And, you know, the hardest, I was just on with one of my clients, and we interface quite a little bit, because he's doing quite a number of different things. And he was the one that I played on the phone, on the call one time within the last, I don't know, it was probably about a few months ago. But he was the one that had corrected his status and then going through the airport. And I played his little two-minute expose that he recorded, because I most of the time I never get anybody that I'm recording or I ask them to, you know, hey, can I record you? Can I get this testimony? Can you, you know, when your own voice, would you explain it? And he was the one that, you know, was explaining how he had with his corrected passport, is coming back in from Mexico City, where he had been attending a conference down there. That actually the conference that he was attending was called the Nomad Capitalist. And that's a website and also YouTube videos you can go to. It's a pretty big operation, and they make their money. Their real, if you want to call their money-making value proposition, is they help people to understand what's the best jurisdictions to go to live free from the craziness of the global taxation model that is, you know, pinned on an obligation of all the different, you know, U.S. citizens. Okay, and so that's where their value comes from, is helping people to be a member of their club, so to speak, and understand all the different jurisdictions to go to, and get a second passport, renounce your citizenship, you know, at one of the embassies wherever you're going to go, whether it's be Malta or Brazil or there's a ton of different jurisdictions competing. And so he was telling me that backstory, and also he put that recording and gave me that recording. I recorded him, and he was saying how, you know, going through the whole process, coming back, okay, into America, how he was treated totally different when it, you know, came right down to it. And from his normal process, because he flies all over the place all the time. He lives in Mexico. And so, and part time he lives in Texas. And so, what's, what's interesting about that is he keeps on telling me, he says, I'm so glad I met you, Greg. You know, I'm so glad I met you, and I'm so glad I didn't do some of these other things, because he really studied quite a little bit, like most people do, all these different types of modalities that people are trying to say you need to go through. And so all I can say is there's a whole lot of hoops that they have you jumping through, some of these other providers out there that are talking about, you know, being a state citizen the whole bit. And they never really get you to the point where you can get your passport and passport card correctly. And that's a problem, because we've found that, you know, the best process is to do what we're doing right here. And, you know, I mean, even Brother John will pop on and talk about this and say, listen, you know, I mean, this is the way to go. And, you know, and Brother John that's doing all these different cases for, you know, some of the students that, some of them that might even be on this line, you know, like he says, he's not even dealing with people unless they're in the process or already have corrected their status. And so it's pretty powerful. But, you know, I understand, you know, Kent, you're out there, you know, listening to people that are doing all kinds of, you know, what they think they need to do. And I think with some of it, the more hoops they have them jumping through and everything, I believe some people think it's, you know, well, this must be really the way to go. It's got to be super complex and super intensive and everything else. And it really isn't. So that's my take on it. And I'll let Michael follow up and say what he was going to say.
Yeah, I would say that, and the first thing is that you really need to ask this question on tomorrow night's call with John. I'm going to take a stab at it. I'm not going to get all the words right, because I was only half listening when he said it a dozen times before. No, I'm teasing. Point being is this. You have several different types of filings that you can do at a courthouse. All of them, except one, give jurisdiction. If you file a title, as an example, in the courthouse, generally just as a public filing, you're actually giving the property away when you do that. There is a form, and I'm just going to call it a private filing, for lack of a better phrase, because that's what I seem to remember. You can do what's called a private filing. The clerk will get this dumb look on their face, because most of the time they haven't heard of it. It's rarely, if ever, used. And it's only the, you know, the clerks that have been there for 30, 40 years that know what it is. But you can do a private filing if you insist on filing. However, answer me this question. Is a free man or woman required to file anything with its servant? Or is it only required for the citizen subject to go to their master and file? That's the question. But please, somebody who's on the call tomorrow night, bring this question up for John, if you would, please. Thank you.
Good idea. Yeah.
So we don't need to. I don't know the people at this meeting. I was asked to speak from my perspective just for 10 minutes because the guy knows me. So I spoke my piece, and I was going on the basis of American National. But his whole spiel is all within common law. And He wins court cases, and I think he goes around the country picking up on this, and just he doesn't teach per se. The lady there, I've spoken to him at length about the lady, and he thinks she's demon possessed. She talks with spirits, and he wins cases, and I don't know how. With all that we've learned here, I don't know how there's so many people that have won their cases on the basis of rights when they're U.S. citizens, and it's never been contested that they're U.S. citizens. They've not contested that they're U.S. that they're not U.S. citizens. Getting that backwards, but. I'd rather not, after being a year in jail, I'd rather not be in another case. But I'm willing to go in there and go get paid.
Okay.
If I have to fight again, now I think I can do it.
Good.
All right. Does that conclude all your questions?
Yeah, I'm good to go. I'm staying, but I'm good to go here.
All right. Appreciate you kindly. All right. Now we've got, let's see here. Next up, we've got Elmer in Nevada. Go ahead, Elmer.
Yeah. What's the definition of a person? Anybody tell me what that is?
That's an interesting one.
A person is in the legal sense is a United States citizen, is an individual. That's another word. Individual is a United States person.
Yeah. So all persons, born or naturalized, not people, not men
right.
and women,
right.
but persons born and naturalized.
Right.
There, a person is, and if you go and look it up, well, hell, just look it up in Webster's Dictionary and say a fictitious entity created for the purpose of the state, no different than a corporation. So that ought to tell you where your status is as a person, and that's why it drives me insane when I hear people talking about, well, this person and that person, or I'm a person or I'm a human being. That drives me. People don't understand the definition of any of that, and it really ought to be brought out with the definition of a person is, as well as the definition of a human being.
Or mankind. I love the term mankind. I'm an old
yeah.
King James kind of guy. You know, I love it when you say the term mankind, because you really can't get that mixed up. And
where in the Bible does it say anything about the human beings or persons that don't?
Well,
wait a second.
That's where I wanted to go. The next little piece, and
okay.
I'll let Michael come in here just after I say this. Really, it's interesting because when it's our Father being recorded in the Bible talking that he's not a respecter of persons. Isn't it interesting?
Amen.
He doesn't say
yeah.
I'm not a respecter of man. It's I'm not a respecter of persons. I love it.
Not a respecter of persons. And then it also says come up out of the things of the world. Well, here we are. This is one of the things I have an issue with. Why in the hell are we going to the State Department to come up out of the things of the world? Because we can't serve two masters. But yet, we're still screwing around with these half-assed government people in the most corrupt nation on earth, this one.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. And I get what you're saying. And what's interesting about what we're doing with the State Department is we're basically correcting the record and just putting them on notice. And at the same time, if you are going to travel, okay, internationally, you're going to go across
right.
the border, Mexico, you're going to have a real hard time without something that is issued by the U.S. State Department called a passport.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
It's going to be more of a battle than you want.
So, yeah, I get it. I understand what you're saying. But, you know, just yeah, everybody talks about Black's Law Dictionary. I don't much care for Black's Law Dictionary. There's not enough definitions. I go back to a Ballantyne's Legal Dictionary. You got to go back to like a 1938 Ballantyne's again and look up the word human being, and it will say sea monster. So you go to monster, and it'll say lower form of man without heritable blood. Well, so what the hell is a hue, man? Is shape of or color of man? It's not the it's not the God-given man that he gave it and said to come forth and take dominion over these things. It's a corporation.
You're exactly right. I love it. I love it. I love it. I love it.
So,
would you
anyway,
like the rest
I just
of the story, Omar?
Pardon me?
Would you like the rest of the story?
Sure.
Sure.
300 years before our Redeemer kinsman walked the land 2,020-some years ago. The Greeks were given permission in cooperation with the Sanhedrin to translate the entirety of the then Hebrew scriptures from the Hebrew that was the same Hebrew that King David read into Greece, into Greek. In the Torah, in Bereshit, in Genesis, the first book, it talked about Anthropinos being created. One of the last creations before man was the word Anthropinos. And then the word for man was Anthropos. The word Anthropinos is properly translated human being. A human. Anthropos, properly translated, is a man. Now, after the Septuagint was written, Esau's people succeeded in infiltrating Jacob's people sufficiently under the umbrella of the word Jew. Prior to this, the scriptures talk about Jacob, Israel. They talk about Esau, Edom. And it's totally delineated between the two. The Greeks kept and maintained what was originally expressed before this usurpation and this successful masquerade under the umbrella Jew, to where you couldn't tell from first cousins one Jew from another, or one Israelite from one Edomite, or Esauian, if you prefer. Couldn't tell the difference. The only way 250 years later that the Sanhedrin successfully convicted our Redeemer kinsman, it would have had to have been at minimum a majority, if not a supermajority, of people voting to hand our Messiah over to the Romans. Caiaphas was an Edomite Jew. Herod, King Herod, was an Edomite Jew. It was common then. The total interface had taken place. When the scriptures were now being transcribed, it came under what is called the Masoretic text, the Masoretes, who were some group of people, of rabbinical people, meaning Esau's people, nearly 1,000 years later, that began the Masoretic text. And when they came across the Hebrew word that meant human, created just before man, that the Greeks translated correctly 300 years before that time to say human, these Edomite Jews translated it to be beasts of the field. They already began the derision and the division of alienating Adam kind, which is what the Almighty One created in His image, from humankind in a controversial way. Instead of calling them human beings like they should have in the translation in the King James, they call them beasts of the field.
Yeah, well, there's a lot of beasts of the field anymore. They tried to make everyone a beast of the field for their benefit.
Well, remember, scripturally speaking, the whole world was destroyed except for Noah and his family, who was, quote, perfect in his generations, meaning that he had no adultery. His seed line was not adulterated. He did not commit adultery in his seed line.
Yeah.
Okay.
Can't say that much anymore, can we?
No, because people don't understand that the seed line is so incredibly important. That is why the Middle Ages and before that wealthy people's daughters, they wore chastity belts. They were trying to keep them pure because the seed line, they understood it, and that's why it was. Today,
yep.
If a young girl has not had sex by the time she's 15, she's looked down upon and mocked by her peers.
Yeah, isn't that the truth? More like three anymore from the way everything goes in this damn country.
Look up the word telegony.
Yeah.
Anybody who is a breeder of registered animals, whether it's dogs, cats, horses, bulls, cows, whatever, a breed line, they keep and maintain it. And when a dog jumps a fence and goes after this prized, bitch in heat, that female dog is no longer able to be used in any competition because her seed line has, her egg line rather, has been ruined. Telegony.
Yeah.
Word is telegony. Thank you, Alma.
No, you're welcome. You guys have a good night. I'm having fun driving through a snowstorm, so I'm kind of focused on two things here.
Stay safe.
Yeah, please.
All right. Next up, we've got Armenta in Virginia. Go ahead. You've been unmuted.
Good evening, everyone. Just wanted to kind of hop on here. Really good, very interesting topics and conversations this evening. My question, just wanted to follow up with Michael concerning the status correction for my husband and if we have anything back yet on that to begin the other process or? Or where we stand.
I had to unmute myself. At this moment, I don't know. I'd have to go into my computer and pull all that. Give me a call tomorrow and let's figure it out real quick. It won't take me a minute in front of my computer. Sometime tomorrow afternoon after 3:00, 4:00 Eastern, please.
Okay. I'll set a reminder for that. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate you.
Uh-huh.
All right. Next up, we've got John in Iowa. Go ahead, John.
Well, thank you. There's some really, really great comments here. And I'd like to make a few points based on the commercial code. All states have adapted it. And in my opinion, what I relate to is based on that, and it's 1206 federal, and in Iowa it's 554.1206, and it says a trier of the fact is under presumption, and this is where it gets convoluted, until you bring forth such evidence to prove the non-existence of that presumption. So you made a good point that they presume us to be the U.S. citizen. And trust me, at 76, I've been through the ringer, and I've tried to study and learn. I've got most of blacks and Ballantines. And the point being, as far as the Bible, Genesis 1:26 through 28, people should commit that to memory. It tells us how to stay in good health. But here's how you can break that presumption. God created man in our image and gave man dominion over the birds of the air, the fish of the sea, and the animals on land. Well, why is that important? Well, years ago, Alfred Adass pointed out that the states, all of them, had man and other animals. Took me a while to find it, but in Chapter 155A of the Pharmacology Definitions, it said man and other animals, which equated us to being animals. So Genesis 1:26, to me, that breaks that presumption. And because of that, the trier presumes everything. I have taken the steps, at least in my opinion, under the common law, four people signing something is a quorum. And the Bible says, I think Jesus says, where two or more are present, things are established. So at least you need two witnesses to establish something. So because of what they've done to me in the past, Al Bartroff has said you have to notice at first instance. Well, the courts have ruled you could challenge jurisdiction at any stage of the proceedings, even after the sentence, but other court cases have kind of overruled that. So I believe you need to do it at the traffic stop, or if not, before the initial appearance. The arraignment is the arrangement. That throws you into a general appearance, which basically gives them jurisdiction. Am I correct on that?
Yeah. I think you're correct on that. Yeah.
Okay. So what I've done, I'm working on my passport application. I had one, and so I'm working on that. But I went to my monthly meeting, and I had four or more people. They've seen my birth certificate, which is authenticated by the state and by the Secretary of Washington, D.C., So I'm diabetic, so I stuck myself to prove that I was a living being, that I drew blood and I'm alive. Then I also had them sign another affidavit that they've seen my birth certificate, I've come of full age, and I've been born of legitimate parents. The top part of my birth certificate makes me out to be a bastard, but fortunately my mother signed it Mrs., my father's name, which legitimized my birth. So I had them witness that and all the other documentation to prove it. And then I had a state notary who was part of the group. He signed it. So I have four witnesses or more, a state officer witness. Then I recorded it with a county recorder's office. And I didn't feel that was good enough, so I ran it for 3 weeks in the local paper, giving them 30 days after that to challenge my jurisdiction or anything I said. And I think, in my opinion, I pretty well got my ass covered with armor plate until I get my my passport and card.
Sounds like you've done a lot. Yep. That's quite a little bit there. Good
what have
job.
I missed? What do you think I've missed?
Well, I don't think you've missed anything. I think you've done a good job there.
Other question, if I could ask.
Yeah.
Okay, in Black's Law Dictionary, it talks about appearance corrects all the defects. So I just got thinking about this in the last month. Say we get the traffic ticket and everything else, and I present them with this stuff that I've had laminated and notice them at first instance, but they haul you in the court. My question, or a point I want to know is, if I go in to that courtroom and make that appearance, even though I state it's by special appearance only, and that's all in my paperwork, I'm wondering if we really shouldn't stay out of court and let them arrest me and put out a warrant and everything else and then go in, because if I walk in, that corrects their presumption, even though I've got the documentation. Or do you think my documentation would stand on its own without that?
And Michael, would you like to unmute? Maybe, you know, I know Michael's probably got some, probably wants to pipe in unless he's on a call or something like that. But
actually, I just came back. I was on a call. I missed the question.
Ooh. Okay.
Okay. I've got all my documentation approved. Who I am and everything. I've ran it for 3 weeks in a newspaper, gave the court 30 days to respond. They didn't respond. So Black's Law Dictionary states that the appearance corrects all defects. So I'm thinking, say I get a traffic ticket and everything, and I've got my documentation to break all the presumptions. But if I walk into that courtroom, regardless, even though I said it's by special appearance, I'm wondering, being as I've got the documentation I have, maybe I shouldn't go into that courtroom and let them put out a reward for my arrest and then go in and explain that position. I mean, I really don't want to walk in and have the presumption be that all their defects corrected. What do you think?
What I think is that your solution is in one single page, and that single page is an affidavit, a declaration, signed under penalty of perjury. Now, GW's process has that affidavit being sent to the State Department of the United States, and you never hear back from them. I when I send anything to the State Department of the United States, I always send a certified return receipt so that I have proof they've received it. It's with the interview, that 15-minute interview at a office of the representative of the State Department of the United States, where you have your passport and your pass card being issued from that meeting, three weeks to 3 months later, you'll get it in the mail. That is still not correcting your status, if you would. That receiving those is just evidence that they've recognized it. Where this comes into effect, and I know this to be true because in one of the litigations, the 63-year-old man that his body was aching and he picked up a case of CBD gummy bears, whatever, with a little THC in it, which was over the counter in California but illegal in Arizona, he had yet... When that incident happened, he had not yet had any correction of his status done at all. He came into it. He bought into it then. And even the letter had not been sent to the affidavit had not been sent to the State Department of the United States before he had that 15-minute interview. So the power is in two places, from my observation. That affidavit is immutable. It's the strongest one piece of page, one paper that you can have. But the other part is you internalizing and understanding the difference. That's the whole purpose for these Monday night calls. That's why I go on and read court case after court case, trying to mix it up to have different court cases so that it's not the same thing every week. To clearly demonstrate the delineation between a U.S. citizen and a Union State citizen. And to have you internalize that so that under any circumstance, you will be able to always posture yourself, position yourself as a Union State citizen, a.k.a. an American national. And then if you do go further into the rabbit hole because the officer is ignorant and continues to write the ticket or whatever reason, and you don't have your pass card or your passport, regardless, there are people I know that do not have their pass card and passport, and they have been doing this for years and continually winning their cases because they understand who they are, they have the proper affidavit, and they submit that in evidence. So you should be on tomorrow night's call. John, who is the anchors Tuesday night, springboards off of everything that GW does and what Bernie does with regards to property and asset protection. Those are the tools that he brings to the table through due process by exercising American jurisprudence, a.k.a. AMJUR, within the court system. And that's why we're now 1 year, nearly 1 year, under our belt here at Your Remedy is in the Law that sponsors all these calls. We're nearly 1 year with our own students. Prior to this, GW was operating separately. I was unaware of him. And he was operating for 13, 14 years. Again, 100% successful with all of his court traffic cases, every one of them. When I heard that, I'm going, man, you're thinking way too small. Well, I'm going to take this thing across the park. And that's what we've done. That's why it's been used and exploited in a drug case. There's another drug case that we're in the midst of, John's in the midst of right now, with also a weapons charge built into that. We're expecting good things to happen very soon. And there's IRS cases that are ancient, that are being resurrected and brought back into play to deal with this correcting of the status. People say, well, I've changed my status. Well, maybe you did. Maybe you were a United States citizen before, and now you're an American national. But all of our students, we're not changing anybody's status. We're correcting it from the beginning, ab initio. We're telling them to correct their records, not pro tunc, from the point of the beginning, correct your records. And that voids any and every intercourse that they have had with government. And it's time to give them back their pleasures. Okay?
That's fantastic information. Can I mention a warning? It's an opinion of a name that was sent.
Sure.
Okay, I had followed Anna Von Ritz for years. I found her to be, say, 80-85% correct. But one thing stuck out in my mind that made me think, in my opinion, she's a government agent setting everybody up. I've spent many hundreds of hours looking up cases, and to me the most important case we can commit to memory is Miranda versus Arizona at page 491, where rights are secured by the Constitution, there could be no rulemaking or legislation that would abrogate them. And too many people, patriots, whatever, they see a site, they don't ever bother to check it out, read it, shepherdize it to make sure it's still valid, and that's the problem. And that case is still valid. Everybody thinks it's all about the police warning, but she quoted that wrong. And somebody of her stature should, and people would take her word for it, use that case, have it misprinted, and get in trouble. That's all.
Yep.
Thank you.
Thank you, John. GW, you want to... Let me just say this. I grew up in the jewelry industry, the jewelry business, and there were a lot of people, competitors, that did not like me being in the business because they were comfortable in their small town, operating as good old boys within the community and that type of thing. And And when I say this, I'm not being a braggart. I'm just saying this is what it was. I brought value. We did our own manufacturing inside that building. We did our own repairs inside that building. We were doing wholesale. We were doing retail, et cetera. And customers, people I'd never met before, would come in and say, oh, you're Michael Edwards. Yes. How may I help you? Do you know what so-and-so says about you naming another jeweler? And I says, no, but I hope it's nice. No, no. And then they go in and tell me whatever. And they'd ask me what my comeback was. And my comeback was always the same. So-and-so brings me my best customers. And that's you, my friend. How may I help you? So we're not bound, we're not inclined here to disparage others that are doing this work. But what we are doing and what GW will point out is he's had the opportunity to look at the various other information providers out there, their work, and he points out the things that are absolutely fatal in their documentation. Am I correct, GW?
Oh, yeah. And at this point, you know, I've done it so many times that people try to keep on sending me this stuff. It's like, please, I don't even want to look at it anymore. You know, and if you want to go with that provider, go with that provider, please. But, you know, nobody's, you know, I'm not saying you have to go with me, but the reason that, you know, I'm so confident and have a lot of very confident clients is because, we're getting it done. We're getting it done right.
Yeah, and the thing to remember, the most important thing to remember is whether you're dealing with Bernie's material, which is creating trusts and a corporation's soul that work hand in glove under 508 of the Internal Revenue Code, or you're correcting your status with GW's work, or you're involved with Mr. Slevin on Tuesday, Wednesday night's call, and building the LLC of all LLCs, it doesn't matter. We have a team in place that is there to support the other members of the team's work and deal with it through the court system as necessary. That's the thing to remember. No matter who else you go to, they're one dog, one pony show, one ring circus. Whole circus here under one, the big tent, if you would. We call it the team. Back to you.
All right. Did that help with your question, sir?
Yeah, thanks a lot. It's really been informative. I've just really a newbie. I started last week, and I've enjoyed all the calls and always learned something.
Awesome.
Good. Awesome. We've learned some things from you, John. Go ahead, Martin.
All right, Elmer, again in Nevada, go ahead.
Hey, the gentleman who was just on there, what I do is when I serve the judges and the district attorneys and that with what I do, I give them 10 days to respond. If they don't respond, then I walk in and serve them with a default. Basically, the default is nothing but an affidavit and point out all the fraud in their paperwork, and they just leave me the hell alone. So, you know, don't hesitate to serve them. You did the right thing by posting it in the public arena, but I've been asking one town in Nevada to never come to their courthouse ever again. And they sent the sheriff to tell me that I am not welcome in their courthouse. I thought that was a wonderful thing. So anyway, and the other thing I have is I also use a book called Mellencoff's Dictionary of American Legal Usage. And it's a pretty good dictionary too.
That's awesome. Awesome.
Anyway, that's all I got. So.
All right. Thank you.
Thanks.
Go ahead, Armenta, again.
Good evening. Thank you again. I actually listening to some of the conversations about the court cases, it reminded me to ask about, I have a friend who is interested in correcting his status. And we spoke a couple of weeks ago, and he was explaining that he had this past case from about 15, 20 years ago where his ex-wife accused him of forging his signature on a check that needed to go to his child. And then although he did get this check and it was written in his name, he cashed the check. This check was from actually the Social Security office. So he cashed the check because his name was written on it. He got a money order, turned around and got a money order for her, but he put in over and above, like $2,000 over and above what was supposed to go to the child. And the ex-wife felt like, well, this should have been more money, but it really wasn't. He actually tried to do the right thing and went over and above. But so she reported him. He ended up going to court. They charged him with a felony for forging signature, for forging his signature, although his name, the check was written to him. And so after a year of this happening, he then, it was lowered to a misdemeanor. But what he's actually looking to do is get it expunged from his records, period, because it never should have happened. After correcting his status, is this something that he can do?
Yes. Let me just say this. The first step that John will adamantly insist upon before engaging with a new student to correct their issues that they're wanting to deal with is they must mm-hmm. correct their status first. That's $5,000.
Okay.
To engage mm-hmm. the team, to engage the team is $20,000. And then when all is said and done, while the process is going through, no matter how many months or years it is, the team is noting each and every violation that the government is making against the student. And when the outcome is where we want to be, where the student wants to be, the reason that they hired the teacher to begin with, the team to begin with, the student is then presented with a contract, with an offer to go after the government for damages. And then
okay.
if you agree to do that, the student receives 25% of the damages awarded, and the team receives 75% for the damages awarded. Now, some students, their first knee-jerk reaction is, hey, I'm the one that went to jail for 13 years and was never guilty to begin with. Yeah. All right, so let's just start. Did you hire an attorney? Maybe if you hadn't hired an attorney, but you worked with paralegals that know the law and you could have stood on your own rights, maybe you wouldn't have gone to jail to begin with. And then secondly, is any attorney that would assist you in going against the United States for this kind of for these issues? The answer is no.
Mm-hmm.
Attorneys are brought into the judge's chambers, and a conversation like something like this happens. If you bring that up in my courtroom, I'll see that you're disbarred or worse. I mean, he's threatening his life. Because the things that you have the right to do as a man or a woman, sui juris is the proper expression after you've corrected your status. Pro per is the proper expression before you've corrected your status. You have more power in the fingernail that you chipped than they have in their entire courtroom.
Hmm.
Okay?
Okay. That sounds good. I will take that information back and begin to get started on that first step.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Appreciate it. Thank you so much.
How do you eat an elephant? One bite at a time.
That's it. Amen. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Yes, ma'am.
All right. And now we've got Kent in West Virginia. Go ahead.
Okay. Can you hear me okay?
Kent, let me just interrupt before you get started here. I want to thank everyone for Kent. I'm thankful for Kent. Some may think that we abuse him because we always, you know, make him wait for last, but he's got the best questions, the most incredible insight to ask these questions, and he anchors our calls. Sometimes it's Monday night, sometimes it's Tuesday night, sometimes it's Saturday night, whatever, Wednesday night with LLCs. Listen to him. His questions are great. Go ahead.
Okay. Thank you, Mike. Greg,
checks
a couple
in the mail,
of things.
Right?
A couple of things, Greg. What you were saying about Bill Clinton, if I understand the question correctly, the answer is that's, you know, I think it's always good to have a qualifier that you could slip out from under on. But don't you think that we also ought to train people, or people ought to be trained or train themselves in how to answer questions with a question? Now, I realize you were talking in particular about depositions, and it may not be possible to, you know, on many, many questions to keep asking more questions yourself. But don't you think that firstly we should dissect anything that anybody is asking us and make a question rather than an answer? And then when we finally do have to answer something, we add a qualifier to it?
Yeah, I like that approach. That's kind of the way that Jesus did it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you think about it. Yeah, I like that approach. I will give you a lot of my past history and people that I've interfaced with and whatnot, and it doesn't mean that really I'm the expert in this arena at all. I'm just, you know, been in some very interesting places and in interfacing with some very interesting people, you know, like, you know, plenipotentiary judge David Wynn Miller and, you know, and some of these people, and they told me some very interesting things, and I've just always remembered them. And, you know, that was one of them. You know, if I understand your question correctly, you know, that response with his philosophy with it. But yeah, I mean, you're thinking, I think, along the right lines, you know, with.
Yeah, I find it difficult, you know, to try and train people to do that. And, you know, I've mentioned before that I've told people in various situations, whether they're going to be assigned an attorney or something, and they have to get, you know, find some way to get rid of that attorney, and I suggest the attorney be interviewed. And even on interviews I've gone on where I've been able to dispose of the attorney, I find that it's, I don't know if that's the right terminology, get the attorney off the case. I find that people don't, if they had to go there a fourth time and do it by themselves, many people still can't do it. So I don't know why this is so hard. But I also believe that if you listen to what other people are saying and not just think about what your next response is going to be or what you should say next or trying to work off of some kind of template and diagram, if you will just listen to the other side, they will give you a whole host of questions to ask them. So, you know, but I don't know. This is kind of a lost art, asking questions. But I wanted to bring the point up because I thought that we shouldn't dismiss the value of answering a question, if you will, by asking another question.
Yeah. No, I what the first part of what you said, you know, was that most people, you know, have a hard time, you know, doing it themselves. And that is by design. I mean, it really is by design. It's all pre-programmed. And, you know, I remember listening to years and years ago, listening to a Christian pastor, professor type guy. What was his name? I would listen to him during the day when I was working. And I remember, you know, I had a lot of respect for him back in the day. And, you know, he would make a comment like this, you know, he who, he who defends himself, he who represents himself has a fool for his as a client or something to that effect, saying that he was inferring that hey, if you're going to get in front of a court, you better hire an attorney, okay? You better not represent yourself. He's being tongue in cheek about it, but at the same time, I remember hearing that and just going, "What?" Now that's one thing that I don't like about what he said. And I was just thinking about that, and of course, there was a lot of other things that he said, later on that I realized were kind of off too. But it's by design that people, for the most part, are made to think that they need a doctor, they need a lawyer, they need a priest to help them confess their sins. they need all these people that are supposed experts and have been certified and have all the accolades. You need an accountant, you need a CPA, you need. And in reality, you really don't. In fact, if you're, I know people that do very, very well that, understand taxes very well, and they have CPAs and they have accountants and whatnot, but they're competent enough to know if the CPA is doing the right thing. Okay, rather than just turning it over to them, most people I work with, they say, "Well, wait a minute, I tell the CPA what to do." Okay, that's what they say. I control my CPA. I know. Mm-hmm. Okay, that's good. If you're able to control your attorney or control your accountant or your CPA, and they're doing what you want them to do because you have an understanding of it, that's a different story. But most people just never study this stuff until they get in trouble. Once they get in trouble, then all of a sudden they're and they've been taken advantage of also. There's so many stories of people over and over and over again, spend all their money on attorneys and it's gotten them nowhere. And so,
I want to offer a response to what you're saying. I think that the society, and this goes back, at 75 years old, I go back to the 1940s. So, I think the society during my lifetime and perhaps before that has been trained to believe they're specialists and they believe that they have training that makes them a specialist. Now, many people who think they're specialists today, I would in no way think they're specialists at all. But because of that, they believe if someone has a title, whether it be a doctor or CPA or a lawyer or whatever, that person must also be a specialist and must know more than them. So we've lost the art. I believe that the best thing you can be in today's society is a generalist and understand what specialists can be used for and then hire the appropriate specialist. But like you said, remain in charge of that specialist because you're still the one that's hiring them or retaining them to do the work. But the art of being a generalist has been lost.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right.
Okay.
You're right.
So my second point that I wanted to raise was tonight you were talking about and Mike was talking about filing and why would the boss file papers in the servant's realm. And, of course, that's a very good question to ask and ponder and come up with an answer for. However, with one of the other callers, they were using the word that they had recorded the document. And, of course, if you go into a court setting or a county clerk setting, you'll see various stamps might be filed, might be recorded, might be entered, et cetera, et cetera. I don't know all the stamps they might have. So, when we give the word file and ask the question whether or not we should be filing a paper for a servant or, in the servant's realm or jurisdiction, do we want to also include the word record or do we want to draw a distinction between these various words that are used and say, well, okay, it's okay to record that document, but it may not be okay to file that document. Could you comment on that, please?
Yeah, that's a good question. And that would be, I would say, that would be a good question for somebody that is really, really has a good firsthand credible knowledge of that. I mean, it wouldn't be me because that's
so
a little bit out of
direct
my...
Direct that question to John?
I would say so. I would say so. That'd be probably a great question for John.
Mm-hmm. Does Mike want to comment on that? And I have one more thing I want to cover. Is Mike there?
I have to. I just to let you know why it takes me so long is I mute myself because background noise and stuff like that. No, I agree with GW that you should bring that up tomorrow night.
Okay. And the third topic I wanted to bring up, and it was even before
right,
you
before,
mentioned it.
Before you get to the third topic, Kent, two things. Mm-hmm. One, Tommy Mills writes in, it was Benjamin Franklin who coined the phrase, he who represents himself in court has a fool for a client, end quote. Just wanted to share that with you. And then the second thing is that had you ever considered the nomenclature Internal Revenue Service? Now, they're all over the country. In fact, they're all over the world. You go anywhere, your income tax duties follow you no matter where you go. And if you want to leave the country, I mean expatriate, you have a huge debt to settle with them before you can move on. Have you ever wondered why it's not called the National Revenue Service? Why is it called the Internal?
It doesn't affect everybody. Doesn't affect everybody.
What is the internal to? And here's your answer. When we came, when we transitioned from being colonists, a citizen of a colony, to that of a citizen of one of the several states in the Union, that was 8 years before the federal constitution as we know it today. 8 years. So the Union states assembled, the Confederacy, was the whole and is the whole today. That internal part was created 8 years later when the Articles of Confederation were amended, renamed. They were amended as you see it today, and it was renamed from the Articles of Confederation to a Constitution for the United States of America, for the United States of America. And in Article 1, Section 8, Clause 17, that was the internal creation of Washington, D.C., all territories, possessions, and enclaves. So to those people, the Internal Revenue operates. And the presumption is to those people that they are subject to the United States. And now there's that one case. Let me see if I can find it real quickly. Here we go. Almost there. Ba-da-da-dum. Da-da-da-da. Here we go. It's the one about the IRS. It says that you have to presume. Here it is. U.S. versus Slater. 545 Fed Sup. It's a 1982 case. Unless the defendant can prove he is not a citizen of the United States, the IRS has the right to inquire and determine a tax liability. Because you are presumed to be internal to the United States and not a Union State citizen. That's what I wanted to get across. Go back to your, what's your next question?
Okay, so I was thinking about this. I read an article the other day, and this was a conventional in-the-system article, so to speak, about the TSA and the number of different programs they have to expedite people through the system. and what they charge for those programs, such as the PreCheck, the CLEAR, the Global Entry Program, et cetera. So, of course, you touched on this a little bit before. I didn't know you were going to, you know, mention it tonight, but my question was, you've said in the past, Greg, that the various people you've known, if I understood you correctly, have been treated, and you alluded to that tonight, much differently once they had the passport card. Do you know if it's across the board with all of these programs that they stay are separate and apart from each other, and just because, you know, you have an ID clearance, for example, that doesn't give you the right not to take off your shoes or your belt or something like that? And I don't know what's involved with the global entry program. So when you're talking about this, do you have firsthand knowledge, for example, that people get all of these services without signing up for them as an American national, and they don't pay any Federal Reserve notes for these services, or have you not explored it to that extent in these reports that you've gotten back from various individuals?
What do you mean? Are you asking if people are paying for like global entry? I don't quite understand your question.
Okay,
it's a little. Are you asking? Do they get treated differently? Yes.
Okay. So what I'm really asking is, with these various programs that TSA has, which are obviously for quote unquote U.S. citizens, have you found that people are treated, people that have corrected their status and have the passport and the passport card, upon the presentation of that, can you succinctly or safely report that all of these other programs that they're making people pay for, so they don't have to go through a line and take their clothes off, or they don't have to have their ID validated, they can enter the system with a global entry card because they've had a prior meeting and they've had a background check, et cetera, et cetera. Were you suggesting, from your knowledge, that someone that corrects their status as American national automatically gets all of this without the payment of fees?
I'm not saying they automatically get everything that's included with the global entry and all that stuff, but they're treated differently. So,
okay.
My friend that got treated extremely differently, the client, I mean, he's signing up for the global entry again.
Mm-hmm.
Just because he wants to make, you know, he just wants to do it all. So it's like, okay, yeah, go ahead.
But actually, if we really think about this, and I realize this is a progression, we're not going to get everything changed overnight, you know, and change everything for everybody overnight. And some people don't necessarily want something changed. But don't you think that if we really think this out and we look at what the TSA offers the U.S. citizen as a program, that we should really get all of that? Because as an American national or as a union state citizen, we shouldn't be bothered by any of these other things that U.S. citizens would be bothered by? Or do you think that I'm, you know, taking too much of a leap here? And I don't know each and every program that the TSA has, but from the article I read, it sounded to me like a lot of these things should just automatically go to the American national, and there shouldn't be any of these questions anyway.
I'm in agreement with you.
Okay. You're not going to argue
with
me.
I'm in agreement with you. Yeah. I'm in agreement. Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. Well, could you, as you speak to people and they report to you these various experiences, could you maybe develop this a little further over time and ask them exactly, you know, how they were treated differently, et cetera, so we develop some kind of thoughts here and some kind of conclusions about what's going on?
Sure. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
All right. I'll just leave you with that. I'll just leave you with that thought for a minute.
All right.
Thank you very much.
Good.
Thank you, Mike. Thank you, Martin. Thank you, Greg.
You're welcome. Thank you, Kent.
All right.
Okay.
All right. Does that take care of everybody there, Mr. Edwards? Those two there have already been taken care of. Let me see here on the Freedoms Radio side. Yeah, that's clear as well. All right.
I want to check to make sure they didn't raise their hands again.
Ed or John, either. Do we have anything further?
Can you hear me?
Yeah. John, is that you, John? Are you all set?
Yeah. Am I on?
Yeah, yeah. Are you all set? Did you have anything further?
Yeah, I just had a quick question on U.S. Code 12411. I mean, the money we use, we can't lawfully prove we bought anything. And somebody had told me that by using that on our checks, in my instance, a Social Security check per 12 U.S.C. 411, that would make that money lawful. Is there any truth to that, or is that just mythology?
I used to do that all the time before actually meeting Bernie. So I used to do it all the time. I have friends that still do that. I have other friends that have actually been in situations where they've been audited, and the only when they got audited, the only check, the only charges that came through was where they missed putting that on their check. You know, where, you know, and they put right there. It's the phrase. I used to have this memorized. So give me a second here. Exchange per 12 USC A411 for US notes. That's the phrase. Exchange, first word, per, P-E-R, 12 USC A411 for US notes. Now, I have to be honest with you. I haven't done that forever because I've been using the I've been operating through the trust. So,
my there question you go. Is wondering if is that evidence that would suck us back in once I get my status changed? Could that be used to suck me back in to being a U.S. citizen?
Why would that suck you back in? Why would it?
Well, it states that the Federal Reserve notes are to be used by Federal Reserve agents for transfer between the banks only. And that terminology of Federal Reserve agents makes me think that they're U.S. citizens, and that's the problem.
Well, they might be, but that's not you. They are.
Okay. I've done that. I just put per on the back of my Social Security check, per 12 USC 411. So I should exchange per 12 USC 411 and what's the other, the rest of it? 411A something?
You make me do this over and over again. Okay. Exchange per 12 USC A411. Okay, and then it, and then the phrase for U.S. notes.
Okay, good. Then I've got it. If somebody else said something this year, I from now on, well, in the last 4 or 5 months, I signed every check. Just that Social Security is roughly all I get, and a little VA disability. But I put buy before I sign
right.
it.
And that.
Yep. Yep. That's a good idea.
Okay. He said that by signing anything by before we place our autograph on it, it makes it impossible to show ambiguity. It basically shows that we're a living being.
Mm-hmm.
That makes sense?
It makes sense.
Okay. God bless you all. Thank you very much. I'm off
God
here.
God bless you all, too. All right. I am, too. I think we're done there. Right, Michael? Right. Martin?
Yep.
Very cool.
All right, Charlie.
Everybody have a good evening.
Yeah, Charlie in Oklahoma. Go ahead, Charlie.
Yeah, let's see. Yeah, I'm unmuted. I missed the front end of that question, and it may be anyway. The gentleman just before, I'm thinking there might be something worth knowing here, and I didn't catch. I think he asked. I missed what he asked. Like, I'm signing my check this away. Is that correct? I think I missed the this away.
Yeah. Okay. I kind of went into it a little bit with this gentleman because he asked that question, and it's not really what this call is supposed to be about. And I don't want to get anybody in trouble, but let's just it's about a phrase on the back of your check that converts it from Federal Reserve notes to what lawful money, which would be U.S. notes,
okay,
which is not taxable. And so the phrase is exchange per 12 U.S.C., that's Title 12, 12 U.S.C., A411, that's the subsection. And then the other phrase is, after that is, four U.S. notes. And if you write it small enough, I've done it hundreds of times in the past, you can get it on the check, you know, all there. And then you would sign your, you know, pay the order below that or whatever. So that'd be kind of up top. Yeah, I know a lot of people that do it. Let's put it that way.
Okay. And I think you said that maybe I think you were meaning charitable religious trust. I don't know. You didn't say the word clearly, but I think that's what you said. Now that I'm using a CRT.
Well, now that I operate through a CRT or charitable religious trust with a 508. Okay.
Okay.
The type that Bernie, Bernie's the one that put it together for me. And, now that I've been operating that way for, you know, I mean, decades, I don't do that anymore. I don't have to do that anymore.
Okay.
Yeah, GW, that's called issuance to reserve banks, nature of obligation. Is that correct?
Yeah, I think it would be in that neck. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you. New to me.
Okay. Well, thank you. Always a little tidbit, lots of things to learn. So thank you.
Okay. Martin, bring us home, please.
All right, folks. Join us again tomorrow night. Check your calendars. Check your emails. You'll see the call coming up tomorrow night. If you need to get in touch
tomorrow
with us.
Tomorrow night is Brother John. Tomorrow night is Brother John. He is the point of the spear. You're going to learn about the litigation aspect of utilizing having corrected your status and having placed all of your property into various charitable religious trusts operating through the corporation soul that Bernie's offers, and how he can use those tools to free you from basically most any problem that you're going to be dealing with in the courts. And then, of course, Wednesday night, again, Mr. Slevin, the LLC, the beastly LLC. Until then, good night, everyone, and be well.
The conference is now completed. Goodbye. The conference is now completed. Goodbye. Welcome to the conference. Please enter the conference ID, followed by the pound key. Thank you. Guest ID accepted.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.